Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. I'm the second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B family brands go to grow. Today's guest brings an international perspective on family enterprise leadership. I'm joined by Dhruv Pandit, executive chairman of Hodari Advisory Services. Dhruv's family enterprise traces back to the 1950s when his father began selling insurance before eventually building a group of businesses across financial services, insurance, and real estate. Over time, the family transitioned away from some regulated businesses and redeployed capital into new ventures and advisory structures designed to support the facility and its operating companies. Today, through Hodari Advisory Services, Dhruv focuses on governance strategy and the professionalization of family enterprises across multiple sectors. He's also deeply involved in the Young Presidents Organization's Global Family Business Network, where leaders exchange hard-learned lessons about navigating legacy, growth, and generational transition. Dhruv, welcome to Growing Up B2B.
Thank you very much, Ed.
Great to have you today. So your family enterprise began with your father involved in the insurance industry in the 1950s. Talk a little bit about your dad and what that generation brought into the business.
Sure. So a little bit further back, my grandfather moved from India in 1915 to what was then a colony of the British Empire, I suppose. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he was just a very, very humble person, very humble origins, trying to make a new life in a new country. So my father, youngest of six siblings, just had to make a start, you know, and that's how he started selling insurance at the age of 18, you know, and just never looked back, I guess.
Wow. And then some years later, when your father passed, you and your brother decided to exit what then had grown into several regulated businesses. Can you talk a little bit about what drove that strategic shift for the two of you to say, we have to make a shift, we have to make some exits here?
Sure. So my father had, you know, basically pulled some capital, started a building society, what you folks in the US would, the equivalent would be, I guess, a savings and loan. So, you know, just taking normal folks' savings and then lending back to people to buy homes, you know, and performing that intermediate function. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it took him, you know, a good 30, 40 years to build quite a substantial financial business. And he also went back to his first love of insurance and founded a insurance company as well, because the two kind of went hand in hand. Sure. So by the time, you know, we were growing up, my brother is you know this, how step generations work. My brother's 15 years older than I am. So he'd already been in the business quite a long time. And then I joined in a different area of it. And we were pretty happy running our own silos under, you know, what my father then moved to the chairman role. Mm-hmm. In that kind of family structure. But when by the time he was passing away, he'd been quite poorly for a number of years, you know, some health issues here and there that took his focus off. And all of those things. And I think one of the pivotal bits was he wasn't actually having fun near the end. It was more of a burden and more of a, you know, how do I hold this thing together for the benefit of future generations? Especially as we put it in the family, widows and orphans money. So it wasn't just our capital risk, you know, when you're a regulated entity, it's other folks' savings. So we saw the burden that it took on him. And my brother and I looked at each other and said, do we really want to be in these businesses? Will we see it through? Do we still have a passion for it? And the market had become extremely competitive. I think we've got to understand in the context, we were having very, very large financial services companies focused on Africa coming in. And it quickly became a decision of actually we'd rather partner with the 800-pound gorillas rather than compete with them. So we started off a couple of trade sales with them, and that's how the decision kind of evolved.
Interesting. So a lot of great takeaways. One, the experience of entering the business with a brother 15 years your senior, that must have been an interesting dynamic. I know it was for me because I had a similar situation with my sister about 15 years my senior. And the having the kind of the emotional visibility to recognize the burden that your dad was carrying, because I think a lot of people miss that. And I think they miss the emotional connection of the business tied to the welfare and well-being of the family, and don't always see that how deep that emotional bond runs, whether it should or shouldn't. It does often, and for you to be able to see that, I think says a lot about you and your brother.
For sure. The founder's identity is tied up in the thing. It becomes at some point it's what they say is it's not work if it's fun. And it was definitely fun for many, many decades for my father, but near the end it wasn't. And I think it was time to transition as well. One way or the other, we would have it doesn't take a death in the family to do that. One, but it does focus the mind, right?
Sure. And as you have that experience in your look back and your knowledge base, as you're going forward now, what are some of the things you look for in a business to say, okay, this particular business model has become either too regulated or too constrained to grow to a further potential? In other words, it's hitting a some kind of a barrier that, by virtue of maybe external circumstances, can't allow it to go beyond.
That's a really good question. The thing about family businesses, we value longevity. We value generational stewardship, those sorts of things. But I think that lesson that taught us is that do we have to stay in the same businesses? We can still be a family business or a business family, as we now like to call it, which is slightly different nuance, which means that do we necessarily have to stay in that same business? Can we not expand our wings and do other things? So more recently, both my nephews have started or are involved in very different businesses, nothing to do with real estate, which I should mention is what we did after we exited the financial services businesses. We also looked at our real estate verticals, and that's where my brother and I focused a lot of our time. And that evolved too a little bit. It was more real estate, commercial and residential, then it became hospitality where we saw some opportunities. Which was appropriate at that time. So as we look to it now, it's some of the decision points are, what is the market, the usual ones that any business would go through. What is the market structure? Are the margin profiles changing? Who are the competitors? Are there rational competitors? Sometimes I think we're being rational and other people aren't, but it's actually very different business models. For example, we have capital pools that are coming into our country that are very international and very long-sighted. They're there to earn a return over 20, 30 years. And part of it is a diversification strategy. Now, if you're diversifying and it's a relatively small part of your portfolio, you can, in essence, afford to earn a zero rate of return. Whereas for us, we've got to, just say, hey, we can't compete with a zero rate of return. So let's go
True.
look for something else. I think another key point is where do our passions and energies lie? I have certainly no interest in imprisoning any of the next generation into a real estate business they might not like, love, because they just won't see it through, right? I'd rather just say that, hey, let's follow your passion and your interests and your skill set as well and see where that goes.
That's a great point, and I think an important one, because a lot of times you see a family generational transition out of duty and obligation and not necessarily passion. And honestly, I've yet to see that work. If the love for that business is not there, it's going to be very hard for that next gen leader to advance it, quite
Sure.
honestly.
And it needn't be love all the time. I mean, we all have,
Of course.
seasons. We all have seasons. And, actually, you provoke a story in my head. My father automatically thought I'd gravitate to real estate. I went and said, that's actually really long cycle, boring stuff. I'd rather be in the banking side. And lo and behold, I spent more of my years actually on the real estate side and grew to love it. So I think there's an obligation to expose people to what we have. But there's also an exposure to say, hey, let me engage with this. It may not be for me today, but at least engage and understand where my platform sits at this point in time. So there is a little bit of to and fro. We can't just let everybody follow their passion wildly, and because passions change too.
For sure, for sure. Yes, and that's a great piece of advice to at least open the door to exploration for that next generation. And they may love it, they may not love it. But until they try and explore, they don't know. So
Yeah,
makes a lot of sense.
absolutely.
Speaking of next generation exploring, one of your nephews is now, as I understand it, stepping into a leadership role. Talk for a moment, Dhruv, about how that dynamic is changing now that the third generation is sort of in the picture.
Not even sort of very squarely and
Very
centrally in
much
the
in the picture.
picture.
Okay.
Yeah, so my nephew is now my operating partner at the governance structure we set up, our family office.
Okay.
There's not a day that I don't think we either speak or email or have a meeting about what's happening, what do we want to do, because it's the family office is our new startup. It's only a year old,
Okay.
and there's a lot of work to be done. And to your question about how do the dynamics change, there's a number of points I'd look to talk about. I think one of them is just checking your ego back and actually saying, what who are we in service to? We're in service to the wider family. So I know better, or indeed he knows better. We're both having to kind of say, hey, explain ourselves to say, hey, this is where I'm coming from here. I'm coming from which hat am I wearing even? So I think we've evolved over the last 3, 4 years, a joke of we wear too many hats, but that's also an acknowledgement of what roles do we play? So we can very easily now bust off steam and just complain. And we're just having a family conversation here. And nobody's going to take it the wrong way of I'm judging somebody or, do this. When we're in so that's in a family situation. When we're in a boardroom and we say, hey, we're wearing a governance hat of directors of the operating business, this is when we engage with management and have that kind of conversation. When we are at family council meeting, we would say that, hey, we're the representatives of the family reporting back to the, not the shareholders now, right, but to the stakeholder. So, and in what context are we speaking? In fact, funny enough, just this January, we were trying to unpack this concept to the wider family to say, because they're even customers of our business as well, right? So in what way are we taking feedback on board? I think it's just a healthier way of having conversations, but it's really
Absolutely.
checking back your ego and listening more.
Yeah, and being mutually self-aware of the context of the conversation. Are we at the dinner table or are we at the boardroom, right? Because the context is different. And some things are okay at the dinner table, but not okay at the boardroom, right?
And the way we grew up was, we brought business to the dinner table all the time. So now I'm sure our spouse partners or spouses and partners, depending, where we are, are more appreciative of that environment as well.
So, talking a bit about Hodari Advisory Services, you've created this governance and advisory structure around the family enterprise. What drove you to do that? Why did you think that was a necessary step or component?
So I think that the picture that we were seeing from the family enterprises was that we had to evolve the enterprises to be much more reactive to a changing market. It's not just in Kenya, but I think the whole world is going through a period of rapid change and complexity, not just geopolitics, but AI, different business models, different ways of generational thinking, all of those sorts of things. Now, if you'd asked me 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, that's what really we're dealing with, I'd have said, you're crazy. We're just dealing with internal stuff. But actually, it's a reflection of where the world is. And we're not an island, as they say.
Very true. Very true.
So in that context, as we were looking at it, we could see that the families were getting more complex. So my brother is a grandfather now, for example. We were having different family needs to serve in different, very different generations. What would a family employment policy look like? Just to bring just one nuance to this whole thing. Is everybody expected to work? If so, where? What's the remuneration? All of those sorts of things. And as we had those conversations, we realized that a lot of our time and focus was going more into those sorts of questions and not necessarily growing the businesses and looking at stewardship for future generations. And when you marry the two things, we said it's time to professionalize. So what we did was we latched onto the concept of a family office, but our definition of it is we're in service to the businesses. While we have a governance role as well, it's a governance role in service for what's best for the business. But at the same time, we're in service to the family. And we're the kind of that interface that looks at both sides. And how can we do that? So we've recruited a CEO. We've got eight staff members now. More of them are in the, no surprise, financial analytics type of thing, legal services a little bit, which is a bit outsourced. We have accounting, for various reasons, but even something that's not so obvious as project management, because we felt that some of the platform skills we can give to the new generation was let's start up a business right. You focus on what you do right, we'll become your back office for a lot of things. So there's some non-obvious things in that, but we think are really going to add value, and already we're seeing traction now, which is really exciting.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So, when you look at governance around family businesses, where are some of the pitfalls or mistakes that you see repeatedly showing up, Drew, regardless of where they might be based, regardless of geography?
Two or three things is really the, as I've alluded to, what hat are you wearing? So when you're looking at the business, are you also a shareholder? Because a shareholder's expectation is return. A board member's expectation is to be strategic and guide the management. And management is to do the operational nitty-gritty. Now, in a family business, it all gets confused. So trying to unpick that apart is important. There'll always be blurry lines. I'm not a purist or a perfectionist to say, you'll never speak about this here, but it's important to know where you're looking at it. I think the other piece over here is trying to unpick the, well, what I would say the need to be agile, because family businesses work tremendously on trust. When they work, they work tremendously well. When they don't work, there's usually a trust issue somewhere involved. A trust or a communication issue, which are interrelated, is kind of my diagnosis of where we stand. But when you're working really, really well on trust, I think that can also lead you down a path of moving very quickly, not looking at downside risk as much, taking bigger and bigger bets, those sorts of things. And then it's really hard when something unexpected happens and derails you, and you're both looking at each other, how did we get here? And when you go look back, I think the advantage of having outsider board members, for example, to help to slow you down a little bit, have some more objectivity, I think is very valuable.
We see a lot of and you may see this too, a lot of one of the pitfalls we often see is for a, and the company could be a service business, it could be a manufacturing business, but you start to peel back, the hood, and there's some massive client concentration or industry concentration where they are just way too leveraged with one big mammoth client or something like that. And if that mammoth goes away, and sometimes they do, that's a massive gaping hole that didn't, and they didn't just show up that way. Usually that relationship grew on the basis of trust and relationship and all the positive and wonderful things that a family business dynamic often brings to the table. And that's why, companies love working with them. And that's why a lot of PE firms love to buy them, because they see that continuity and stability. But then when you have that heavy concentration, that's, in our view, a heavy risk, that needs to be addressed and acknowledged. And when things are good, it's hard to do that and say, wait a minute, this company is now commanding a massive share of our total, our total value as a business. We've got to make that less, we've got to be less dependent on that one massive relationship or find ways to do that. Do you ever run across that?
Oh, 100%, because family businesses love family businesses because we have kind of the same ethos of handshake deals documented later. You're doing well. And when things go wrong, they're easy, more easily fixable because you can get to the top reasonably quickly. Whereas, shall we say, a more layered organization, there's some hoops to jump through. And when it's successful, it's unbelievably good, right? For sure. And the other piece I'd bring in, there's also a key piece here of concentration in people, succession planning. So you have a key man risk generally in those types of situations as well, I'd have thought. All it takes is one person to shift, or and life happens, right? And then suddenly it's a different dynamic, and it's then it gets a bit more painful.
And often I'm thinking of a past guest. It was a brother sister team. They were already embedded in the business, but their father passed. He passed unexpectedly, and they had to scramble. And even though they were entrenched, and thank goodness they were, because they had enough of a foothold on the business to carry it forward. But boy, there was a lot of, what I'll call tribal knowledge, or their dad's thinking, or their dad's, own sort of personal IP that vanished in an instant, and that was, definitely a hard year for them to navigate. And when they look back and say, okay, well, we're not doing that again. And so, to their credit, putting in processes and documentation and all the things that, maybe weren't in place as well as they should have been. But yes, you're right. When an event occurrence happens and nobody's expecting it, that can often be a panic button for a family governed enterprise with a highly dependent leader of that enterprise.
So true. That resonates so much. And indeed, the other piece now is that you don't want the pendulum to swing all the other way, where you become so process driven, so documentation driven, that you could have just been dealing with anything, right? A box, and then you start losing customers, your staff get demotivated, you yourself aren't having fun doing what you're supposed to do. So it's kind of finding a balance, and it changes. I think what we are becoming more comfortable with now is, like this pendulum will swing, but let's not swing it too far. And let's understand that there will be seasons.
Yes, that's a great point. So, coming from a family business and serving those, obviously legacy is very important to you. And how do families avoid letting legacy become a constraint rather than a foundation? So when you look at businesses, when sometimes legacy can be a constraint, how do you kind of avoid, how can families avoid letting that happen?
So you're so right, because the constraint could be I need to hang on to the brand because, and in many cases, as we know, the brand literally is the family name. It's synonymous, right? So that's one constraint that immediately comes to mind. But I think the foundation, I think the word we use a lot now is stewardship, is who is the widest stakeholder here? So we are stewards of the businesses, but we're also stewards of the families. Families change. So part of this thing to do is to say, as stewards, we don't necessarily own anything ourselves. We're just custodians for future generations. And I think that emotional distance helps find the balance that we're not quite a PE that has to deliver return every quarter or has a 7-year horizon and we have to return money to our shareholders. That's kind of one extreme I'd like to paint. But on the other side, nor are we beholden to have to do this for the next 10 generations just because it worked for the last three or whatever it is. We again, it's a question of finding balance and a little bit of question asking. Rather, I think we're getting better. We're not the best. We try and ask why questions a lot now. Why am I feeling this even? Why is that so important? What precedent am I setting for the future? So even a simple thing like a seemingly simple thing like my son's coming back for Easter break, He's got a month. He's going to intern at our family office. But what precedent are we setting? Is that a right or an obligation? Should he be paid or not paid? What even are his working hours? Just little questions like that are just informing if somebody else wanted to come in and work, what precedent have we set? If they didn't want to work, what precedent are we setting? It's just thinking of things a little bit through to say, let's slow down to speed up is another catch-all phrase that we've been using a lot this week, in fact, this month.
And bringing it back to that scenario, that kind of thinking around that kind of scenario, will ultimately enrich the experience of your son, because he'll walk in and say, "Wow, they've thought this through." There's a, yeah.
If you met my son, he'd say that they may have thought this through, but here are four more suggestions.
Good for
He
him
really,
then.
yeah, absolutely. It's very, by their very nature, the next generation loves to push the older one, and we love that. And at the end of the day, that's what entrepreneurs do. And part of our family values is that we want to foster entrepreneurship. So will we get it right every time? Probably not. And in fact, we shouldn't. Mistake, there should be room for mistakes, because how else will we learn?
And I love the open-mindedness across generations, as there are several at play in your organization. And it reminds me of a recent guest I had on, and we talked about that not only was she dealing with at least three, if not four, generations of personnel, but the same on the client side.
Oh,
So
wow.
being very sensitive to the generational dynamics at play. And having that awareness amongst the team when dealing with their clients proved to be a very important element to, how they treat people, how they talk to people, the manner in which they communicate, down to very little things, but little things with a big impact.
So true. And just asking questions. It's like, if he comes home and shares things with the family, with his mom, for example, or his grandmother, the what is he allowed to share, not share? We're just thinking it's not a question of we're keeping secrets, but it's more of these may be some ideas that are just work in progress, not fully defined. Can be misconstrued without context. So again, just being mindful, as you rightly say, of just certain behaviors is so important. So long, the one non-negotiable is our values. That for us is stays up front.
And they see that a lot in whether it's, and sometimes it's very well defined, sometimes it could be defined better, but when you see that, and that's often what the generational continuity, where it shows up is, the landscape will change, the company will change, its clients will change, technology and the world around us will change, but oftentimes holding true to those core values is the enduring light by which that business moves forward, irrespective of the circumstances of the day. So a very important point you just brought up. So shifting gears a little bit. Your involvement with YPO's Family Business Network has been fairly significant. Talk about that for a moment, Drew. What role has that community played in your own journey?
Thank you. So it's pretty cool to have a network of CEOs where, and the classic phrase is when you join YPO, it's suddenly not lonely at the top. Because oftentimes, the CEO makes the call, the buck stops here. And when you've got a community like that, and especially a global community, you feel you have things you can talk about. So the network has been phenomenal for my journey, for my family's journey, because we've got access to world-class resources. We have webinars, all of those sorts of things that are very authentic and very timely, in fact. The other pieces, we have something called network forums. Forums in YPO are where groups of CEOs get together in a confidential environment to just be vulnerable and actually just speak their truth, for want of a better word, and really get not advice, but get experience share from other folks who may have walked the same journey, maybe not exactly the same way. Clearly, we're all diverse, and we own our own journeys. But there'll be aha moments to say, "Oh, I would never have thought of how to deal with that situation," and What were the pitfalls in that thing, or what were the opportunities in that conversation? And with that experience share, we can walk back and actually gain confidence with our constructs and say, hey, how can we move on? Not just with our challenges, but with our opportunities. And it's really powerful to have that diversity, because let's be honest, Nairobi is a very, very small town. And even within YPO, everybody kind of knows each other, does business with each other in some way. And some of these conversations can get difficult to have.
Sure.
Whereas with a global group, it's much easier in some ways.
But sometimes those are the hard conversations are the most important, and sometimes the best. And certainly, a lot of times it's hard to be vulnerable. Belonging to a similar organization where a lot of times there's a desire to kind of position that everything is wonderful. But sometimes everything isn't wonderful, and making sure people know it's okay to talk about the things that aren't wonderful. In fact, it's kind of the point, right? To be
100%.
vulnerable and, So talk about
100%.
that for a minute. What's an insight that maybe you learned from another family business leader, whether it be through the Family Business Network or other, that fundamentally changed or shifted how you think about business or ownership yourself, Dhruv?
That's a really good question. A couple of aha moments that not necessarily we've practiced, but it's just different way of looking at things. If it wasn't for YPO, I would never have even comprehended, let's put it this way, the concept of one generation buying out the earlier founding generation or an earlier generation. And it solves for many things, but where we come from, it's like it's kind of assumed that you're going to inherit everything. And whereas, why, let's test that assumption. Why should anybody inherit anything in the first place? I'm not saying it's necessarily a bad thing or a good thing. This is not a political discussion. But it's just testing what are you trying to solve for? Another aha moment is that actually, while the current leadership feels in some ways a heavy responsibility, let me not call it a burden, but a heavy responsibility. The next generation actually feels a lot of pressure and responsibility that may be even more unspoken. And then it can manifest in very, very many different ways that sometimes we're just not conscious to. And just being aware of that and just testing to say, hey, are we putting too much pressure on you? Or how can I help is one of the famous phrases. Like, we have got to all deal with a situation. How can I help? And that just opens up more opportunities for more constructive discussion, I think. Whereas before, traditionally it's been a very, risk. Just give you a value of ours is respect. Now, respect can be construed in many, many different ways, but one of the constructions is let me hold my tongue and not say what I'm really feeling. And that can be detrimental over the long run. Whereas a respectful conversation, say, would be something like, hey, I don't know how to bring this up with you, but can I just tell you how I'm feeling? With a little bit of positioning statement, suddenly we can look things earlier in the day.
Absolutely. I mean, and it's an important skill when dealing with multiple family members and in that dynamic within the business structure to there's got to be an ability to speak your mind. However, at the back end, there's always a do no harm to speaking your mind. So to your point, couching it and putting it in the proper context so that you're not, hurting somebody's feelings, but rather speaking your mind without doing so, so they understand this is not personal. This is not emotional. This is a conversation we need to have. And I think sometimes you see family businesses break apart because the old wounds built up for too long,
Oh,
to a
so
great point.
true. So true. And unfortunately, it's the breakups are not necessarily a bad thing. But it's the way you do it. If there's a bit more grace, a bit more understanding, a bit more of this, there's so many things that could happen. There's so many solutions that could happen out there that could help all sides. I mean, we have a phrase in our family called interdependent, but independent. So that we're kind of drawing a little bit of boundaries as to where, go enjoy your life, go be independent, go do all of these things. But understand there's an interdependency that allows us to do all of that for each other. And what are our roles and responsibilities in that context?
That's a great way to frame it. I want to go back to something you said earlier, and just expand on it a bit more. You said recently you brought in an outside CEO. So if you could talk for a moment, because a lot we see that a lot in the family business dynamic where the family members in place, for various reasons, elect outside leadership, non-family member leadership, to play either a CEO role or maybe a president role. So, if you could talk for a moment, Drew, what qualities were you looking for in a non-family member leader?
Great question. So we've had over the decades, we've had many of the different businesses having non-family CEOs. But that was on the operating business side, where it's a bit more defined. An operating business has financial statements, metrics, comparatives across industries where you can benchmark. So it becomes a lot more about performance from that expectation perspective. Skill sets that are more well defined. A banker is a banker. You would not put a real estate guy in charge of a bank necessarily, or vice versa. So certain skill sets or certain professional qualifications. All of the above pieces, right, would are much more clearly defined. Whereas in a family office, it's much more softer skills that we're looking for, or a way of doing things. So I would say alignment with our values, first of all. And the key one is stewardship, where you've got to have an objective view of today's seasons, but also with an eye of what does this mean for the future? So I think that's very much one. Really good, I would say, communication skills, because you're not just communicating to business owners, but to non-business owners. So, trying to bridge that gap. And I think the other piece over here is a lot of patience, because we're complex people, by definition. So a lot of patience to actually come in and say, okay, this is what are we really trying to build here? And coming back and asking that question, what are we really trying to do here, is a really good way of looking at somebody in this role, I think.
Yeah, and typically from and we've had some guests on our show that were that outside CEO brought in to lead the company, whereas family members involved did not wish to carry that responsibility. And what's intriguing is the family members who were entrusted to make that decision were assessing that potential CEO, and that CEO is assessing the family just as much.
100%. Yeah.
And saying, can I operate in this infrastructure? What are the rules of the road? What are the things that I don't see that I need to see to operate in a meaningful way? What latitudes will I have to be empowered to make decisions? And all of those questions, which I think is very healthy. I think that's the right way to do it. Whereas he's being interviewed or she's being interviewed, but he or she is also doing some interviewing themselves.
For sure. And I think this is where the alignment of values piece becomes so important, because that allows you then to say, trust isn't built in a day. Trust is a process sometimes. So as even giving, being vulnerable and saying, oh, these are the family secrets in some ways, what's the secret sauce? And trusting somebody with that outside, an outsider with that information, but that equally that person's trusting you to say, hey, give me a chance to perform here. This will not happen in a day, and you've got to help me as best as you can to understand context of the last 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. Why did we end up here? And what is it that you're really asking me to achieve? Because there's a lot of trade-offs. Do we keep capital in the business to grow? But is there a cash flow need? If there is a cash flow need, am I allowed to go leverage with a financial institution? If so, do you realize you're going to give away some sort of control, whether it's debt or equity? There is a control aspect that you need to give away. And there's this famous triangle of, value creation, income streams, and control that is always going to be traded off.
Yes, that's a great point. And for those family businesses that are listening that are contemplating bringing in that outside leader, all I would say is you may as well be honest up front, because if they're good, they're going to find out soon enough.
For sure. And why would you not want to hire somebody good? Then you might as well not do that, right?
So, as you look to the future, Drove, what do you see? What's the next chapter of your family enterprise? What does that look like as you look out to the next 3, 5 years, or maybe even beyond?
Great question. And actually, funny enough, I was asked this on another podcast, and it's something I hadn't really thought about. So, but some of the things I would say, I think still hold value. I would think that we may be a bit more multinational. There's no guarantee the children will come back to Kenya, which is an opportunity, really, diversification, all
Sure.
of that. I think will we serve other family offices as well, or other families with our family office become a multi-family office? There's a good chance of that. There's a good chance. I think we are really onto, even though it's a year in, we've got some really good young people with us. There's a lot of mentoring that's needed. But as we get our act together, as it were, and serve ourselves and, just get our heads up a little bit beyond our own family, why not serve other families? And I think there's a philosophy we have here of an ecosystem of advisors where we won't do everything. And our ecosystem of advisors will serve in, drop in, and drop out as needed. But at the same time, can we create an ecosystem of families that have the same values? Can we share business opportunities with each other? Maybe even internship opportunities with each other, best practices. And we have the makings of it just because of our personal relationships. But could we institutionalize that a bit more? I think would be really cool to do. But it's going to take some work and some years away, a little bit.
Sure. So, if just imagine for a minute, if your grandfather, or possibly even your father, were to come back and sit amongst you in the boardroom today, what do you think would surprise him the most about what he saw, either one of those gentlemen, if they saw where you are today and what you're doing today, what do you think would be like, wow, that's interesting?
Yeah, surprise is interesting. In a positive way or a negative way is the piece. I probably would speak more about my father because I never met my grandfather.
Okay.
He passed away, like a month or two after I was born.
Oh, okay.
I've heard lots of stories about him, but I wouldn't presume to guess, what would be the reaction. But it would be one of pride and surprise, I think, as to, in a century, so what is possible? So I would definitely say that. For my father, I think some of the surprises would be how we operate as a family now. In terms of we're a little looser confederation than we were when he was alive. But I think he'd also he'd appreciate that that was necessary and for good reasons. And for him, it would be more about, are you still a family, right? Are you still holding those values? So from the business side, oh, geez, he's been through so much. He may be surprised as to what we're doing and not doing. But then he was an entrepreneur. He had multiple businesses that he ran for a few weeks and quickly realized that, hey, this isn't really for us, and shut them down. So I think for some of that may not be too much of a surprise.
Okay.
Yeah.
I often wonder what my dad would think about when he'd see the onset and proliferation of AI, and I can't even fathom.
Oh yeah, no. Oh yeah, for sure, for sure. I mean, if we're looking at those sorts of things, how are we actually operating? Like social media, you're going to trust a total stranger, with that, really?
Yeah, it's a bit of a
Yeah.
different landscape. Last question. If any of our listeners wanted to connect with you to learn more about yourself, about Hodari Advisory Services, what's the best way for them to reach out to you, Drew?
Oh, LinkedIn for sure.
Okay.
I'm sure they'll get the URL of the web of the piece from you. So yeah, that'd be
Will
the
do.
easiest.
Wonderful. Well, family enterprise leadership is rarely linear. It evolves across generations, industries, and economic cycles. Drew, thank you for sharing your perspective on how governance, community, and intentional leadership can help family businesses sustain legacy while they embrace change. Again, we've been speaking with Drew Pendant of Hodari Advisory Services, and I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. And this has been another episode of Growing Up B2B. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Dhruv, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Super grateful to you too.
Thank you. Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.deleonet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at deleonet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.